Exactly.
Because otherwise it's just a thought.
It's a concept, yeah,
it's
which is not
idea.
Helpful. Yeah.
And you, logically you say, yeah, it must be so maybe because this such and such a person saying it or so and so saying it. But it isn't your reality.
So you haven't had the experience yet. Yeah.
Because you haven't experienced it.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. That's what this. All of this is based upon. It's based on the knowledge that nothing is real for us that we haven't experienced for ourselves.
Yes.
Nothing is really meaningful and true for us unless and until we've experienced it for ourselves. And that's what makes this so challenging in terms of something to teach or to share, is that you cannot give someone a body of content and assume that they've got it. First of all, because there's very little content, because it's not about content. But second of all, no matter how well you deliver it, or how many times you point in that direction, the person can still look somewhere else. Or they can still see someone, something else. And you can't be in charge of that, anybody else. The main criterion, really, is patience. Whether it's with yourself or with someone else, it's just to have enough patience. And I just say to people, just keep showing up. Just keep showing up. Doesn't matter if you can't see anything. Doesn't matter if it doesn't make sense to you. If you keep showing up and you keep looking in that direction, I can assure you at some point you'll get at least a glimpse of it. Now, the reason that I can be pretty confident about that now, partly by hanging around people who've been in this a lot longer than I have. So I know that they're not bullshitting me. You know, I know that they wouldn't be in a job if this weren't the case. But I also know that the reason that you're likely to see it eventually is because it's true. It's not made up. So we're not pointing to something that's just a good theory, that maybe is true for some people, maybe is not true for others. We're pointing to something that's a basic truth for how humans are made. So anybody who looks there for long enough, sooner or later, they're going to get a glimpse. They're going to get a glimpse of their own nature. It's just a question of when. To me, that's the mystery. Nobody can say when. Someone gave that lovely analogy of the popcorn, you know? It's like you throw the popcorn into the hot oil. They don't all go off at the same time. Yeah? Everything starts popping. Some it's immediate, some it's after a little while. And some, even you take it off the heat, it still hasn't popped, right? And you cannot predict ahead of time who's going to pop when. It's just the nature of it. There's an individual something that overrides anybody's urge to make it happen. That it's out of our hands, that bit.
You're saying in homeopathy that, you know, it's a susceptibility.
Yeah.
But I think in this, it's receptivity.
Receptivity, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, it's that.
Yeah, openness, receptivity, which again is it's an intangible thing. We cannot force anyone to be more receptive than they are. We can't even force ourselves to be more receptive than we are in a given moment. It's just that we know when we are and we know when we're not. When we are, we let something in. When we're not, we don't. And we can't. It's a very peculiar thing.
There's this this is another quote from the Artist's Way, the book.
Which way? Artist's Way. Way.
But it's James Abbott. I don't know who he is.
Me neither.
He's talking about art, but it sounds exactly like that. And he says, art happens. No novel is safe from it. No prince can depend on it. The vast intelligence cannot bring it about. And it sounds to me
that's
strange,
it.
That he's
actually... Yeah. It has those same qualities, doesn't it? The more you try and force creativity to come, the more it shuts down. Yeah. And yet, somehow, if you are receptive, it pays a visit. Yeah. Now, even though these elevators go two ways, like our consciousness, we can go up and down in the space of an hour. We can go from being very clear-minded and very loving, accepting, nice place to be in ourselves. We can go from that and plummet into a state. We can get ourselves into a mood. We can feel resentful, we can be upset, start blaming somebody or blaming ourselves, literally within a matter of moments. However, if you've been to the third floor or the seventh floor, even if only once in your life, no one can take that away from you. You saw what was there, right? You had a glimpse. Now, you might go back down and go down into the basement for a while, but you can never fully forget what you saw up there. And that's why I think Sid Bax was emphatic about this, is that the consciousness expansion or growth is a one-way street, in a sense. You never lose fully, you never lose full sight of what you've once seen. So once you have, even if you just glimpsed it for a moment, it's a bit like that, you know, that secret door. Once you've leaned on the bookshelf and that door is open for you, you might have to fumble around a few times before you find it again, but you know it's there, right? Before that happened, you didn't know it was there. So it was just chance. But once it's opened for you once, it becomes more likely that you're going to find your way back and it's going to open again. So this is true of all the levels. Once you've seen things from a certain level, you can never fully go back to not seeing that again. Paradoxically, whenever you do temporarily, it hurts more now than it did before you went to that higher level. Do you follow that? It hurts more in the sense that some part of you knows better. You know, some part of you knows different. And it's a bit like when you've tasted something that tastes really good and then you go back to eating something horrible again. It's more horrible now because you've had an experience of something which was really nice. And that's maybe what spurs us on, you know, the fact that it stays with you, it niggles at you. I know it doesn't have to be like this because I've experienced it being different. Any thoughts, questions? Put the next piece. This is just analogy, it's just metaphor. I'm not saying that we are like the sky, but as a metaphor it works. We have that clarity and spaciousness within us. We also have, part of our nature is the ability to generate thought to the extent that we completely lose sight of that, so that it seems like it's gone away, it's no longer available. But we could have the background knowledge that it hasn't gone anywhere. It's still there. So even on the most stormiest, grey, horrible, foggy day, we know. Sun's actually still shining. You ever get in an airplane, 5 minutes later, you're above the clouds. It's always a blue sky up there, isn't it? Have you noticed? You don't have to go far, and suddenly it's blue sky. It's always on. So it's the same with us. We don't have to go far to get our head above the clouds. According to Sid Banks, you're one thought away. Ever. You're only ever one thought away. That's bonkers, isn't it? One thought away from misery, one thought away from psychological health and happiness. And what's the thought? It's so little, and yet, you know, when I was preparing this a few months ago, I had the kind of simultaneous experience. I was gathering the slides together, and it was a nice day. It was an autumn day, and it started off really blue, as the days often do in Devon, and then at a certain point the clouds start coming in from the west. Most of our weather comes from the west, it seems. And I was out in the garden just having a break, and I was struck by the fact that there was like a solitary cloud, and I was watching this cloud, and I could see it was coming off Dartmoor, close to where we live, and I could see this cloud, and it was like, in relation to the sky, it was tiny. There was nothing to it. It was like one I could put my hand like that and I'd got the whole cloud, you know, within my grasp. It was really tiny. I could see it coming across. And at a certain point, that was it. It was lined up between the sun and myself. Now, I was just... It really struck me. I mean, I've probably seen that happen a million times, but I'd never experienced it like this before. It struck me how, you know, that sunlight is travelling, was it 93 million miles or something? And then about half a mile away from where I was standing, a tiny little cloud is sufficient to obscure the magnificence of the sunlight momentarily. That's all it took, one little passing cloud. And my experience was the sun's gone out. It's gone, it's freezing, you know. It's gone dark and it's freezing cold. And then a few seconds later, That was it. And I thought, that's just like thought. It's just like thought. So one passing thought is enough to obscure our experience of divinity, of the truth of who we are. That's all it takes. It's wild, isn't it, when you think about it? It's like, geez, what a design.
Probably the other way around, with
a
glimpse, if it's cloudy and it's the
same. That's it. One little chink appears.
And then you see the glimpse.
Yeah, the light opens up again. It's the same principle. Yeah. It's. But it also struck me how ephemeral it is. Ephemeral meaning it comes and goes so readily if we let it. That's also the nature of thought. The nature of passing cloud to come and go. It's the nature of thought to come and go, if we let it.
I think the certainty also increases the more glimpses you have.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
It becomes knowing.
Yeah.
Rather than, oh, I think maybe.
Exactly. So even on the cloudy day, when your consciousness has gone down, your mood has gone down, you're not feeling at your best. You're absolutely right. The more that you've had those glimpses, the more that background awareness stays with you. Even as your mood goes down, you know it ain't going to last forever.
That's what the speakers were mainly talking about.
Yeah.
It's not that they were saying that they were immune to not having moods or
exactly.
Down days.
Yeah.
But they knew that it would pass.
Exactly. Yeah. And they knew better than to add anything to it. Like to get stuck into it and make a big feast for it and consequently make it bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah, that's the learning, I think, which for most of us comes gradually, is that you gradually learn that doesn't work. What does work is just to remember, this will pass, like it always has.
Yeah, I think typically the same.
Yeah.
You also start to feel the effort it takes to add to it.
Yeah, to try and get yourself out of it by your own will somehow, or even just to make it worse by your own will, by your own volition.
Yeah.
It's either way, it's a struggle. Yeah, it's tiring. It never helps. Although that hasn't stopped us before, has it? You know? The fact that we've all done that many times, it hasn't helped. But we keep doing it. But we didn't know any different. You know? In that sense, it was innocent.
It's a bit like when the weather people describe the weather. Well, it's November, it's seasonal weather.
Yeah.
It's cold, it's wet, it's not, it's sunny, it's breezy, it's all, you know, it's doing something. And they'll describe something that's seasonal as miserable,
mm-hmm.
like it's a person that's
mm-hmm.
having a sulk or something.
Mm-hmm.
You go, what's all that about?
Yeah.
And it's a sunny day, you go, oh, it's happy weather today.
Mm, exactly.
It's loving weather.
As if weather were capable of feeling anything.
And then no wonder people go, oh, I feel miserable because I've just described it as miserable weather.
I know. Yeah, miserable describes the human experience.
Yeah.
It doesn't describe the weather.
No, it's actually seasonal in this country. This is what happens.
Yeah.
November.
Yeah.
Oh, it's raining. Oh, no, look, it's raining. Well, what do you think grows your crops then that you stuff in?
Right.
Not be so tactful.
Yeah.
We need it.
Exactly. Here's another analogy. My laptop. Now, let's suppose I said to you, I'm going to give you a laptop, but you've got to choose between two models. Okay? Model A.
I think this is a real thing, this is really going to happen.
Model A has got a really big hard drive. What's a big hard drive these days?
Is it memory?
Yeah, is it?
Capability.
How big is big? Is it 1 terabyte? Is it? Oh, 1,000 gigabytes, let's say. It's a terabyte, isn't it? So it's 1,000 gigabyte hard drive, maybe even two. I'll throw in two terabytes of hard drive, right? However, it's got no internet. Or you can have model two, which has got pretty crummy little hard drive, but you've got 24/7 high speed access to the World Wide Web. Who wants model A? No. Nobody? Model B? Mm. How come?
I'm connected.
You're connected.
I just love being. It's the world, isn't it? Just,
what is it you're connected to?
Everything.
Information.
The present. If you need, you don't need to lose.
You can get everything you need from that when you need it. Mm. Mm. Wouldn't you rather have a really big hard drive? What's the limitation of the hard drive, no matter what its size is?
It's always in the past. I mean, it's always... Yeah.
It's always in the past. It's only as good as what you put in it, or what someone else put in it before they gave it to you. So it's always going to be limited by that. Whatever's been put in, that's the limit of what you can get out. That's like our brain. It's a very, very, very good computer hard drive. It's got a memory bank within it, which records everything. Everything that's been programmed in by ourselves, by life experience, by everybody around us. It's a fantastic memory bank in that sense. However, it's completely limited to what's happened before. Whereas, if you're connected to something that's much bigger than yourself, which by analogy we're calling the World Wide Web, and you've got 24/7 access to that, do you need that hard drive? Suddenly it becomes, actually, I could let go of that. If I can access anything I need whenever, without even knowing what it might be, you know, you don't have to know ahead of time. You don't have to have already learned it or second-guess it in any way. You just know that it's there. Whatever you might need, it's going to be there. Because it's so big, it's got everything. Everything's covered. It's a no-brainer, isn't it? And yet, the way that we've been taught to live our life, largely, is to depend upon the hard drive and ignore the connection to the bigger web. That's what most of us have been doing if we've been having a struggle with life. We've been depending on the hard drive.
So they're using your experience rather than your gut.
Exactly. Yeah. So, well, I did this before, therefore, you know, that's the only thing I can do now. Mm-hmm. So we exclude all other possibilities the moment we do that.
The web analogy is very good because it opens a lot more possibilities than you would have ever considered or would have had the opportunity to accumulate in your life.
It's way beyond what any individual could ever, ever, ever possibly experience. And yet, it's available to any individual who wants to tap into it. Yeah. And that's, to me, that's the principle of mind. That's what it's about. It's recognizing that there's an intelligence that is so much bigger, so much bigger. It doesn't matter how good your database is that you've got in here. I don't care how brilliant your mind is, your personal life experience, etc. I don't care what you've been through. It is nothing compared to the magnificence of that which is behind all of life. Boy, you know, we cannot hold a candle to that. There's absolutely no comparison. And when you see that you're connected to that, and you have the choice of tapping into that and living in the flow of that intelligence, or you can limit yourself to this. Once you see that you really have a choice about that, it's a no-brainer. Nobody would go for the laptop with the hard drive, right? And yet, in our life, that's what we've been doing over and over again. We've been relying on something small and personal and historical, and cutting ourselves off from something which is way bigger. Way bigger.
It's fascinating for me, actually, is when you say, you know, how you go in and out of it, sort of is. Yes, I think there is a choice, and after knowing all of this or experiencing some of it, why do we choose to go back in it? I mean, what is it that compels us to go back right into it?
It's a good question, because it's like if we really had a choice, would anyone do that? You know, and it shows that we're not consciously choosing these things at all. Nobody would, you know. Once if you've seen that the fork in the road, it goes this way and you suffer, and it goes this way and you don't. Anybody who really had a conscious choice in the moment wouldn't take the route of suffering. So it's obviously something else which is compelling us, which is not conscious. And I think that's why Sid Banks often talks about innocence. You know, we're innocently misusing thought. We just don't see it in the moment. Why do we do it? I don't know. Does anybody know?
Fit in. Well, it's a habit.
It's a habit. We do it to fit in.
We've done things 1,000 times.
We've always done that,
but we still think, I'll just try it another time just to make sure.
Could be that.
To fit in with other people's, to be, comfortable. Sort of comfortable around,
Look
like some mad anarchist.
Yeah.
We didn't train when we were young, so we must have learned it at some stage.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, we learn it pretty quickly, though. The thing is, it is very compelling, isn't it? The physical world is very compelling, and it's very easy for us to get fooled by it. You know, it really, really, just as it really looks to us like the sun goes up and down, it really looks to us like, for example, it could easily look to me like my mood has gone down because the weather's turned horrible. You know, if I get up and it's blue sky and I feel good and I associate my good mood with that sunny day, and then suddenly the clouds come and it's pouring down just as I'm going out the door, I could easily think that weather's ruined my day. You know, it's very compelling in that sense. It's easy for us to gather evidence to support the idea that things outside of us change our feelings. They force us to feel things that we weren't feeling a moment ago. So I think even as youngsters, we fall prey to the illusion of the physical world very, very quickly.
It's difficult not to be bombarded. You get these moments of clarity and then you're bombarded constantly.
I know.
So, on a weak moment you just go, all right, I'll go back to the old way of thinking.
Yeah.
And then, you might get up the next morning and think, oh, I'm a bit stronger today. No, that was all rubbish.
Oh.
But it's that constant bombardment that you're going to try to overcome on you, really, that everything around you, all your senses are being bombarded with this image of...
It's an outside-in world. Yeah.
I think the education system, in a way, falls with that accumulation of the hard drive.
Because that's what it's designed to do.
It's designed to do that, and you're valued more in society.
Exactly.
If you excel at that.
Yeah. Yeah, the bigger the hard drive and the more stuff you've got on it and the faster you can access it, the brighter you are.
Yes.
And therefore, the better your career prospects and all of this nonsense.
Yeah, and the way that you're headhunted for jobs, and the way everybody looks up to you, etc.
I know.
And then the reverse is also true. If you don't fit into that model or that way of doing things, then you're no good.
I know. It's true. That's what's been emphasized in the Western education model.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now being challenged. It's gradually people are starting to realize the limitations of that. How long it will take for that to really change around, I have no idea. But it makes sense that we would educate ourselves that way and our children that way because that's what we think. So, of course. Anybody hear of this guy? Nikola Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
Known as a kind of mad inventor, scientist. He created some amazing things in his lifetime. I just like this quote that he came out with. My brain is only a receiver. In the universe, there is a core from which we obtain knowledge, strength, inspiration. I have not penetrated into the secrets of this core, but I know that it exists. So as a scientist, he was really inspired. He had some amazing, inspirational things that literally they just came to him and he was like, wow. And that was his conclusion. It's not coming from me. It's, the intelligence is in there.
Wasn't he one of the people who's really ridiculed?
Oh yeah, totally.
And he was really thought mad and...
Yep.
this was one of the people I met.
Yeah, yeah, he was.
And really he was seemed to be the only voice amongst the majority.
He was miles ahead of his time and still is, even though he's been dead I don't know how many years now. Most of his ideas have still not been accepted by mainstream science, but gradually they are being.
Einstein also said something very similar, didn't he?
Yeah.
It was something about inspiration that was the secret, not...
Yeah. He talked a lot about that, and also imagination. for Einstein said imagination is much more powerful than the rational thinking, because it's much bigger, and it's acknowledging that it's coming from a different place within us.
Where I was saying that when I first read about him, this was only about a month ago, about this person.
Tesla?
Yeah, no, I've never come across the name before. And I was just in so much awe of this person and admiration and respect. That how did he have that strength, that inner strength?
I know, to be a lone voice against all of this opposition.
That's what I mean. It empowers that person to such a great conviction.
Yeah.
That they have the strength to withstand the world in a way.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
If you see it from that perspective, from the three principles, or you realize how dysfunctional it is to think any other way.
I know.
And it. There's no way that, you know, I suppose that's how you can...
Hence the suffering in the world.
You know? Yeah, and I suppose this is how you get the strength from.
Yeah.
To just be that you can't possibly... Nobody can turn you around, I guess. Nobody can.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
The best we can do is point someone in the direction where they can turn themselves around. And even that, they don't have to do it. They just need to stop turning themselves away. No, it's not even that we have to turn ourselves in the direction of this universal intelligence. It's always on. It's only ourselves that takes our experience away from it. So it's an undoing. It's not a doing.
Mm.
Which makes it especially hard to grasp. So, okay, I understand that. Now, how do I apply it? Well, well, you're already applying it, you know. When you're suffering, you're applying it. When you're feeling good, you're applying it. This is how you live your life, is by applying the three principles every moment of your life. It's not something that you suddenly decide to start applying now that you've learned about it. It's like saying, well, how do I apply gravity now that I've learned that? Well, have you been falling over before you learned it? You know, you've been applying it all your life. You just didn't credit it before. And it's the same with these principles. They've been living through us every moment since we were born, but we never gave it the credit. So the other analogy that we've used already, just briefly revisit, is the projector. We mentioned this last month, 2 months ago, whenever it was. And in this analogy, the film is what?
Thought,
yeah. So the film would represent thought. So whatever's running through the light of consciousness any given moment, that's what gets activated and thrown onto the screen of life. That's what you get to experience. So that's the variable. Thought is the variable. So with 6.5 billion human beings on the planet, that's the bit we get to play with. Individually, we get to make up a script and characters and a plot and a life situation and a drama, and then we get to play it out. We get to throw it on the screen and bring it to life. The other aspects to this are the same for everyone. The power source, which is the universal consciousness, and the intelligence behind the whole design, which we call mind, that's the same for everybody. It makes no distinctions between one person and another. It does not respect class, gender, or anything else. It's completely neutral. And similarly with the light of consciousness, completely neutral. So, up to us what we run through.
I was trying to think of how I could explain this to someone, and I was thinking of the art. In as much as you've got the paper, you've got the paint, and you've got the paintbrush, all of them being completely neutral until you pick it up.
Yeah.
And each person who picks up the paintbrush and the paint and the paper will create something different.
They're going to depict it differently, even using the same apparatus.
Yeah, because that's the thought. That's the thought that goes into
it. That's nice. That's the same analogy Sid Banks used.
Yeah.
So you're in good company. He called it, he said it's like a divine paintbrush. Thought. He was using it as an analogy for thought. He said, it's a divine paintbrush. And he said it's, everyone starts with a blank canvas and paints their experience upon it. Yeah. It's nice.
But this analogy is probably because a few months back, maybe 10 months ago, whenever I have this very, I've had, whenever I smoke up, which is rare, I don't smoke up often, but the last time was pretty significant. There were two times that I remember them because it's something that I do very occasionally. The last time, though, this analogy is getting to me. It was very strange, and I felt like I was going, I don't know where I was going, obviously, but I think what it is now is that it's like my thoughts were having a conversation with my consciousness, or something like that,
mm-hmm.
and it felt that way, like you're going up different levels, and there's this weird light, and I can't explain it, because I was obviously stoned. No.
It made sense at the time.
But I came out of it, and I know, and up until now, I still remember that, and I know there's something there, and while I was in it, I was thinking to myself, I'll never know if this is real or not.
Yeah.
I'll never know, because, I mean, it could be the drugs, it could be me, it could be, who knows, I'll never know, and that's okay. But whatever that consciousness, or whatever God, or whatever it is that I felt I was going back to, I got an image of Buddha with this big smile, and it's nothing matters really, whatever you give to me, it's all good, and that's state.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that, I'm not advocating drugs, but I mean, I think maybe they can help, because they let go, that you let go of all the, it was a very interesting experience.
You know, it's like you got a glimpse of the neutrality, you just saw the neutrality. It's like whatever passes through, that's what I'm going to experience, and it can be a horror show, it can be a beautiful paradise, but it's the same. This in the Hindu tradition, they talk about that a lot. They call it the lila, the play of life, and it's just the play of life. And whether we call it tragedy or beauty, or it's all the same. Well, you're not identified with the form, you see. So the moment that we connect back to the formless, that's how it always feels. It's like, it's coming home. It's beautiful. And from that place, it doesn't matter what's passing through. It really doesn't matter. Now, until you know that, you think it matters what film's playing.
Yeah.
Right? That's the difference. Until you know that, until you know that you can connect to a place within you that is not touched by whatever's passing through, until you know that, it will be really important to you to have a good film and not a bad one. And you'll get into all kinds of techniques and ideas about changing thought and replacing bad feelings with good feelings and getting yourself out of states and into states. All of that seems to matter. You get into manipulating the content. But the moment you step back from it and you just see, it's all the bloody same. If you go into a place like a storehouse where there's a whole bunch of movies, and it goes from A to Z, so you've got Rocky Horror Show here, you've got documentaries here, and you've got zombies there, and you've got love stories here, right? But if you don't get to watch any of it, you just get to pull a bit of the film out. It's all the same, right? Doesn't matter which one you pull out. It's just film, it's just film, it's just film. Until it's brought to life, there's no difference. It's all the bloody same. And it's like this. Whatever we run through, that's what we get to experience, but its nature is no different. And it's really seeing that that's powerful, because it breaks the fixation that we have with working with content. Working with the content of our mind. Because some people get really lost in that for a while. The idea that we've got to manipulate the content of our experience. We've got to turn it from negative to positive. We've got to get rid of this bad feeling, replace it with good feelings and so on. mean, I've spent a few decades of my life working in that field. And I had to do it enough to realise that it was endless. That's what gave me the insight to see that maybe there was another way of working. When I actually saw that it doesn't matter how much of a person's suffering I help them to let go of. If they have retained the capacity to generate new thought, which everybody does, then they can easily replace it overnight with something that's equivalent to what they just let go of. Now I can say, well, that's good for my business, but it's not good for my soul. At a certain point, it's not good for my soul. There's a certain point where I just couldn't do that anymore. Until you see it, it makes perfect sense to do it. That's the funny thing. The interesting thing about substances, whether it's drugs or whatever it happens to be, is that you could give 6 people the same thing to smoke or the same acid to take or whatever it is. Are they all going to have the same experience? Why not? If the experience is supposedly being induced by the drug, they should all have the same experience, no?
It's like what you were talking about yesterday, the sort of levels of, your level of well-being depends on where you are on that scale.
Exactly. Exactly.
What
so,
the response is going to be.
Yeah. So what people would call a bad trip, or a bad experience, sometimes they might blame it, it's a bad batch. Whatever, and I'm not saying they couldn't be contaminated drugs and so on, but very often you'll find one person says that was a bad batch and someone else, no, it was great. It was wonderful, you just didn't take enough or something like that. But what they're missing is that the experience is being generated within you. It's not being generated from the substance on its own. That has to run through the same filter as every other experience, and that's unique to any individual at a given point in time.
I think that's what's very interesting about it, is it kind of exaggerates your state, so but
makes it more visible in that
so
sense.
Clear,
yeah.
Where you're at.
Yeah.
So I've used it in that way. Okay,
yeah.
I see where I'm at now.
Sometimes if you really
confusion, it's
it gives you a perspective which you didn't have otherwise. Yeah. I remember. Any of you heard of Ram Dass?
Mm.
Yeah, the American. Spiritual teacher, and he had his early history was he was hanging out with Timothy Leary and his early experimenters with LSD, and they were taking serious doses of LSD, really stretching the limits of what it could do, and eventually he got to a point where he was kind of done with it, and he met a spiritual teacher called Neem Karoli Baba, who's an Indian guru, and he went off and lived with him and followed him around for a few years. And at some point, the guru got curious about this acid, which he'd heard them all talking about, And he said, oh, yeah, next time, can you get me some of that? I'd like to try it. And they're like, what's that? Is that a good idea kind of thing? So anyway, he said, no, get me some. I want to try it. So they brought him some, and it was like the best sort of stuff that they could find. And he says, and they had like several tabs, is it? Tabs of it? Well, I don't know how much a tab is, but they had several. And they were kind of recommending, for someone who's not used to this sort of thing, you might want to just take half of one. And he just says, let's see, what have you got there? And he's got a handful. Oh, just give me the lot. And he grabbed the lot, shoved it all in his mouth and swallowed it. Right? And Ram Dass and everyone, they were all freaking out. It's like, oh my God, For them, one of these tabs would have been enough to be off for maybe a 12-hour journey into the unknown. He swallowed about, I don't know how many, a handful. And then he just basically went about his business and absolutely nothing happened. And they were all like, that's not possible. This is the most powerful stuff we could get our hands on. They paid a fortune for it. Nothing happened. He was just like, oh, yeah, is that it? Yeah.
And he was already there, probably.
Well, they subsequently came to see it was a teaching for them about the nature of mind, the nature of consciousness, and what it was really about. And helping them to let go of the attachment to the idea that it's the drug that does stuff, it's the drug that induces states. He was, I think in his own way, he was showing them that, no, it's you, it's all coming from you. And you can use these things, as you say, as a magnifier, or as an amplifier, it's still coming from you. And my assumption would be someone who's in that clear consciousness, doesn't matter what they take, didn't touch him. He just didn't touch him. It's amazing, no?
Mm.
It's a funny story. So they were all freaking out.
Okay, let's get into that one. Oh, there was one other slide I was going to show you.
That's Max Planck. He was one of the pioneers of quantum physics. He was considered to be the father of quantum mechanics. And he said, all matter originates and exists only by virtue of a force which brings the particle of an atom to vibration and holds this most minute solar system of the atom together. We must assume, behind this force, the existence of a conscious and intelligent mind. This mind is the matrix of all matter. That was in about 1920 something. It's when the physicists first went into the subatomic level and they realised that, well, what looks solid isn't, you know. It's just vast amounts of empty space, these tiny, tiny potential particles in high velocity motion, creating the illusion of form. You know, the scientists, they saw it. It's just an illusion of form. And then they saw, well, how, you know, how can it sustain itself? There has to be an intelligence behind that. If those particles just randomly went off anywhere, there would be no form in the way that we experience it in nature. It would not exist. The whole thing would just implode. And yet, stuff holds together, you know. There is an intelligence in the design. So a lot of these scientists, they started speaking in mystical terms, really. They had to. It was the only language that would adequately describe what they were seeing. Conscious and intelligent mind. And you talk to a religious person, they would say that's God, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a different word, but it's pointing to the same thing, pointing to something which is prior to the world that we can see with our senses. Okay. See if there's one bit more I was going to show you. Here's an example of, I once spent a couple of hours just gathering stuff from media clips, which, just as an example to show you how bombarded we are with outside-in thinking. So that was just a random sample on one day of actual headlines that were in various newspapers and websites. Asian shares tumble as Europe fears deepen. So obviously the fears are deepening because the shares are tumbling, right?
Mm.
So it seems. Anger grows at $500,000 tax bill for Heroes Memorial. So people really think that they're angry because of this tax bill for the memorial. Resolute Bay plane crash survivor filled with sadness. Well, that we can understand, right? If someone is a plane crash, of course you're going to feel sad. Yes? No? Maybe? Tori Spelling fights guilt of being a working mother. That's going to help, isn't it? Feeling guilty and then fighting it. Good luck with that one, Tori. Green with envy. Pippa Middleton divides opinion over wedding outfit. September 11 firefighter, Kevin Murray. My guilt over dead colleagues. So someone who survived the Twin Towers disaster. So he lived, saw some of his colleagues that didn't. And then, subsequently, he's feeling guilty about it. And probably in his mind, he's guilty because of what happened. They survived and I didn't.
The
huh?
They survived,
they didn't, sorry. Island boss in rage at Tim Horan fake claims. Steelers losing Houston I'm assuming that's some sort of baseball team or something, I don't know. Time to panic? Should we get panicky about that? Believe it or not, people do. People get panicky and they start riots and things, depending on whether their team wins or doesn't win.
Petrol shortage.
Yeah, I know. Isn't it neat?
And they all just go and buy the petrol.
It's cool, isn't it?
Reasoning.
I spoilt my child to ease the guilt. Anger ahead of Coast Guard tug's withdrawal. That was local news from Plymouth. He threatened to withdraw the Coast Guard. There was a lot of anger about that. FTSE falls again as city traders fear that Greece will default on its loans. So they must have been in a state of fear for a long time around that one, because that's been on the cards for about 2 years now. This took me about an hour. Now, if I'd spent a day, I could have filled a volume with this. That's what we've been subject to day in, day out, every day of our lives. All your feelings are coming from stuff happening that's not pleasant, or stuff not happening that should be, etc., etc.
There's stuff happening that doesn't affect you in most instances. I mean, you know, it's not your world that's playing Crash by the Resolute Bay. It's not your world that puts
it. I know, but we can make it our world if we want to. That's how crazy-making we are. I knew a guy who used to get absolutely crazy whenever George Bush came on the TV. He's an English guy. He'd never met George Bush in his life. He didn't have a vote in America, right? He had no say in the politics. He would go crazy. Didn't matter what George Bush was saying. Just the image of him on the TV, he'd get furious. Completely, it would ruin his day. That's how nutty we are.
Turn it off.
Well, if you can. That's what it looks like. It looks like my day is ruined because of stuff like this. Bad weather, horrible husband, car crash, kids losing the plot, all the mail contains bills, whatever. I've noticed that happen. You know, when the mail comes, you go, ooh, mail comes, bill. Bill, Bill. You know, and I've noticed that. And nowadays it doesn't happen so much, but I can remember getting really caught in that, you know. It's like, oh, jeez, the bills. Laptop blows up. Yeah, that could ruin your day. There's a good definition of stress. Sounds about right, isn't it? Confusion created when the mind must override the body's basic desire to chuck the living shit out of some asshole who desperately deserves it. Mm. Seems like that when you're in that kind of a frame of mind. But we know better. Let's see. Okay. That's just the other side of the same coin. If I had all of this stuff, then I'd be happy. So, we've all got our own version of that running. If I had enough money, if I had a nice car, if I had the right relationship, if I had the beautiful house, if the sun would shine, whatever it is, I mean, we've all got our own version. So that conditioning is just as powerful as it is on the negative side. I would say for some people more so. Some of us, we get more caught in that, in the idea that we can't be okay unless, until. You know, we postpone our okayness until we've achieved some imaginary future goal.
Yes, it's sort of, if we have all the nice things, it means we're nice people.
Could be, yeah.
That's like the thing. Where's my mirror? I deserve, you know, I've been aged for 7.5 years.
Where's my stuff? Yeah.
Yeah, my stuff. Yeah.
Exactly.
MacBook Air.
And the thing that would you like one? Do you want one with the hard drive or do you want one with?
Yes, everything.
But you know the popularity of the whole secret thing. You know the secret and the law of attraction. That's really seeped into the popular consciousness, and I got curious about that, like a lot of people, for a while, and I looked into it and played with it. It's just a kind of playful attitude towards it. I didn't take it too seriously, but I thought, well, there's something in this. And I started to see how it's still outside in.
Mm-hmm.
It's outside in thinking. It's all based on the idea, like attracting stuff, attracting experiences. The assumption behind that is that you need that stuff in order to feel good, in order to feel okay. And to me, it's the wrong way around. It's inverted. And the paradox, of course, is that when you don't need it, when you know you don't need it, guess what? It's a whole lot easier to generate it. It doesn't matter what it is.
I think, though, that's what, like, there's a miss, there's that idea that it's outside. But when she writes about it, the idea that if I remember correctly, she was saying, like, if you want something, believe you already have it.
Yes.
And yeah. Then you get all the...
Yeah.
So she does kind of...
Yeah,
it's
point.
Kind of like
she you're right.
That line,
yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like realizing that there is something about you
yeah, yeah.
feeling...
Yeah, you got to feel good first in order to let
it
come in. This is
it's not quite, but it's a very...
It's still not quite there. The reason being...
It's very surface.
What it doesn't address is, why do you want it?
Yeah.
You know? Why do you think you want it?
Yeah.
That's really what it doesn't address. Why do you think you need that? What difference is that going to make if you had it? You know, the assumption is it's just a good idea to bring this stuff into your life. Okay, one more and then we'll have a tea break.
And it's funny because if you can imagine that you feel good for whatever reason,
yes,
imagine that you have it, imagine that whatever,
yeah,
and you really do believe that you feel good, then khalas, that's it, you know,
you don't need it.
You don't need it
because you've already got.
She forgets to mention.
You already got the good feeling.
It.
I know,
yeah,
I know. I used to explore
yeah.
that with clients sometimes. If someone came and we did a kind, of, it was more like a coaching session with some of my clients, and I would ask, "So, okay, so what do you want?" They said, "Well, you know, I want to triple my income." I said, okay, so I've got a magic wand here. Let's just suppose that we pulled it off today. Your income's now tripled. What difference did it make? And they go, whew, that's great. I can relax now. And, you know, all my worries about money have gone. I said, oh, isn't that cool? You got what you wanted. And you didn't have to generate the money. Like, what you really wanted was to feel good, was to feel different. And that's always true. When anyone gets into goal setting or trying to achieve something that they currently don't have in their experience, it's always got a feeling state attached to it in their mind, which they're usually not aware of. What they really want is the feeling state.
It seems to me that it's like that book, The Secret, and probably a lot of other books are pointing that
yeah.
direction, but they don't know that this is what they're pointing at.
I know. It's close, though. You know, it's close,
yeah.
but it doesn't go the whole way.
Mm.
And
that's why they work for while,
yeah,
and they're not sustainable.
Exactly.
Because the way that it's been explained through the three principles, or you know, make you aware of the understanding of it, it's almost like you don't have to worry about anything. The infinite is accessible to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so strange because we're always brought up to believe that we have to strive,
mm-hmm. I know, and there's stuff we need. We really need it.
We need it.
Yeah.
Common.
Yeah. So as we say, this is not new. Mr. Shakespeare, nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so.
Mm.
He was such a smart ass, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
It's like the boxes of different films, but they're all, and if you kind of think that, then nothing's scary. So if you get sick
exactly.
and have terminal, or
exactly.
it's all the same.
It's all the same.
Just what to do with it.
Exactly. It's all neutral. And you can even see that with, if you take the analogy of films a bit further, what for me would be terrifying, someone else would love it. Right? Same film.
Mm-hmm.
So I know people will go watch these films, like people, you know, people cutting each other to pieces. I don't want to go near it. They say, oh, that's great. They really look forward to it, they really enjoy it. So it can't be the film. You know, it hasn't changed. So even the horror film is not horrible for everybody. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And the love story is not a love story for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We still run it through a filter. So, you know, if you interview people as they come out of the cinema, what did you think of that? You will never get a consistent answer. No one's ever going to explain it in exactly the same way. It's been run through the filter. All right, let's have a tea break.
Are we all nod off?